Short disclaimer. This podcast is in no way affiliated with the Stars production or Diana Gabaldon. All views expressed are solely our own. Welcome to the Outlander podcast,
where the men are kilted, the women are winsome,
and the whiskey is neat. Welcome to episode 54 of the Outlander podcast. I'm Ginger.
And I'm Summer, and we are in love with all things Outlander. So, announcements this week. We got another casting. You know, the closer we get to the end of the filming of the first season, the less I expect casting news.
I know, it seems.
For season one, so.
It always surprises me.
Right, so, but we got casting news this week.
But we haven't gotten McCranick. I'm getting a little twitchy.
Or maybe they're just hiding it. Maybe they're probably... What if it's like a famous person and they want it to be a surprise?
That would be awesome. I am still... You know who I'm still holding out hope for.
Okay. I'm just saying.
Okay.
That's something they could do. But we did get our Horrocks. Which is silly because isn't he supposed to be like... Is he Irish? Well, the actor is Irish,
no,
for
sure.
No,
but the part is supposed to be he's... A deserter from the army, but for some reason, I think he is an Irishman. I don't know why. I know he is Irish, but
he is Irish. His name is, I believe, pardon me butchering it, Lachlan O'Meara, and he's very good looking.
He's very dashing
and
looking,
very good looking for a character who is never seen in the books.
So this is another thing that is he in the books? Yes. Do we see him, quote unquote, in the books? No. So I think this is one of those changes.
The reason we don't see him is because it's Claire's point of view.
I know that, but having said that, this is one of those changes or additions that, as Diana says, things happen off screen or off page. Many things off page. Most stuff happens off page that we get to see here. So this is kind of neat.
It's true. And as you watched tonight's episode. 105 Rent. Mm-hmm. There was another addition we'll speak about later. So, additions, all of them so far have been welcome, and like we've always said, they just add to the story. They take nothing away. So, congrats, well done, Stars. So, Outlander had another Ask Outlander this week. This week it was with Graham McTavish, our Dougal McKenzie, and it was rather lengthy. Like.
I think he was a little bit late. He said he was coming a little bit late from a table read from his current project.
Well, you have to understand.
He's very busy.
He is very busy, but he's also in Boston currently.
Yeah.
So he's probably on, like, the weirdest kind of jet lag ever because he's used to being, you know, in Scotland and on that time period. And then, you know, I know they spent some time jumping around from California to New York, back to Scotland, and now he's back in Boston. So he's probably really confused with the time change. So, that must be like the mother of all jet lags. We got our newsletter, our Saturday newsletter. This one was very appreciated. All about kilts.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so funny. Like, all of the little titles there kind of made me crack up a little bit. Like, the kilt was very functional.
Mm-hmm.
No bright red tartans here. And it all started with a man in a kilt. This is very true, all of those things. But it's a great little newsletter.
And the title of it, at least in their email, was Real Men Wear Kilts.
And as well they should.
Mm-hmm.
We got several photos this week. We got another one of... Apparently, I think there's a new series of Sam Heughan holding weapons. And last week we got him holding a dirk, and this week we got him holding a very tiny gun. Like, this is a very tiny gun. Like, compared to the guns that you hear about while reading the book, this is tiny.
Mm-hmm.
We got a new Hey Lassie. This one says, Hey Lassie, the only oath I take is to you. And honestly, I don't think you can read a Hey Lassie without having a little bit of a smarmy voice.
Smarmy?
A little smarmy Hey Lassie. I'm feeling smarmy today. I say smarmy. But I guess it would be more authentic if I did a kind of a smarmy Scottish accent, but I don't know how to do that. So we'll have to research that. And we got a picture of a different point of view of the falling scene at the pillory. it's got the people that she knocks down minus the grate of fire. And they're falling on, luckily, a nice mat.
Mm-hmm. So. I wish there was a magical mat that appeared anytime I fell.
I don't know. Maybe that. But the lady on the right makes me think she belongs in, like, Mary Poppins. I don't know why. But I'm just looking at her, and I'm expecting her to, like, song and dance. We got two notifications of new countries getting Outlander.
Mm-hmm.
We got Spain this week, and we also got Latin America. So that's pretty. I think it's. Is it ironic that Spain and Latin America got it at the same time?
Is it because
they just got the translations and they're like, let's pump it to all of the Spanish speaking countries right now?
I just think it's kind of cool that it was announced or let out this week.
Hey. There are some very important places that still need it.
Period. Yes, that is true.
And definitely last but not least, I don't know if you guys have looked at the New York Times bestseller list recently, but number one on the New York Times bestseller is Outlander, the first book in the series. And if you scroll down, scroll down to number nine,
previously from number 13,
uh-huh. Dragonfly and Amber. So, I don't know if we have anything to do with that, but we have been telling you to go out and get Dragonfly and Amber to get ready for our read-along. So, if we had anything to do with it, you're welcome. But if not, we are just glad that more people will have access to it now to join us, perhaps, for our read-along coming very, very soon.
We are itching to start. Maybe not itching. We're very excited to start that.
Very, very true. And that wraps up our announcements for this week. Let's move on to our episode discussion.
So, episode 105, Rent.
And the first thing that comes to my mind when I saw the title was that I was expecting to see Adam Pascal and Anthony Rapp and Idina Menzel jump out into the screen and start singing Rent, the song from the musical.
565,000.
That's not even the right lyric.
What's the number?
It's not that. I think it's 525,600 minutes.
I think you're right.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I had the right notes, at least the right intervals. But yeah, me too. I tweeted about that.
But I was
hashtag Rent.
I was thinking more hashtag along the Outlander. Lines of the actual Rent song.
Yes,
Rent.
I just thought musical, awesome, another tie-in to us.
And I think that, musicals for sure. But I think that this episode's two like parenthetical titles should be in which we meet Ned Gowan, and then followed closely by
Swiving.
No, Where the Boys Are Boys, because
Which is also equal to swiving.
I suppose. But, I mean,
That word was used
a lot. Or just boys behaving badly. Because,
yeah.
I mean, they were just being boys. Like, I think that it was just, this is what happens when you put a bunch of boys together.
Whether or not there's a girl. Absolutely.
Oh, it was almost like she wasn't even there.
She definitely was not even there.
So.
Okay, so let's start from the top.
From the top.
So in the first scene, this is something that's been kind of teased. We've seen a few shots of it. I absolutely loved her outfit when she's standing there. I almost said against the law. When her image, or she's standing next to, or profile, whatever it is. This view, the one from her behind, standing before the law, was one of my favorite since the dancing in episode one.
Now, this is the same outfit that she was riding on horseback as they left Leoc.
At the end of four?
Yes. And again, I say that this was the most impractical use of white fur in the history of white fur.
But it's pretty.
No, it was super pretty. I'm just surprised she was able to keep it that clean.
We meet Ned Gowan on a horse. I love this man, and he's not that little.
No. No, you know.
Littler than her, but not that little.
I thought it was a nice introduction of Ned Gowan.
It was pretty gentle.
Because with her standing on the side of the lake and reciting poetry, and for him to show up and recite poetry, it instantly made you know that this was, you know, a romantic, sentimental gentleman.
Yes.
Who also,
you know, learned.
He's very learned. And that was very important.
And we also meet, because we've seen him, and apparently in many, many photos when people were saying, oh, those are the Mackenzies, and you're like, who's Willie?
Oh, that's right.
And we meet young Willie Mackenzie. And interesting introduction to Willie. It's like he's...
They told him that he needed
Jamie's
to go
Jamie's not the only
have
virgin.
Whatnot with his sister.
Apparently.
And I was also noticed that, you know, with my whole boys will be boys statement, I was like, even Murta, because the people that fighting was Willie and Murta. So
that's
usually
true.
Murta's so stoic, and he was right in the thick of it with everybody else. So that was interesting and fun to see.
So quickly after the episode starts, Claire has another opportunity to help heal someone or use her healing skills.
I think she has to do this once per episode, at least.
At least.
But I don't remember. In the books, I don't recall Ned Gowan having asthma.
I don't know, but if he did, she definitely didn't ever prescribe a pipe, I don't think.
But, I mean, it was totally an authentic...
Herb?
Well, yeah, an authentic... It was herbs, an authentic I think, have been around treatment. For a while. It was I an authentic so. Treatment.
That
for the...
pipe looked awfully new and unused. That white wooden or light brown wooden pipe looked awfully unused and new.
Well, maybe he just pulled it out of her. Well, it was his. It was his.
Oh, then he didn't smoke much.
Probably not.
Or pipe much. Listening to his cough before she was introducing her healing technique actually made me want to start to cough. As I was taking notes, I'm like, no, Ginger, you don't need to cough. You're fine. And Claire, I wrote, well, Claire goes getting Ned on the pipe using thorn apple.
Okay, please. Can we never say that again?
Thorn apple or no. Gets him on the pipe?
Getting Ned on the pipe.
I thought you might have something to say about that.
That's like the worst phrase ever.
Well, there's a few. Just wait.
And that's not what happened.
I have a few gems coming up. So then they basically take off and they're on the road again, right? And we find out that Ned studied at the University of Edinburgh mm-hmm. and he had a practice. And then he just couldn't stick with it. Not that he couldn't do it, but he has an adventurous spirit. He just wanted to bugger off in a good way.
Another point. I liked that they kept... his insistence that there be no live pigs.
Oh.
As payment.
Yes.
Now, they never explain it in the mm-hmm. books either, but I really want to know what happened in the previous years to make him not want live pigs.
Yeah. That would be interesting. Maybe another question for Diana one time.
Perhaps.
Again, beautiful scenery, snow-covered Munros or Bens, whichever they are.
This has to be the most we've seen of Scotland landscapes since like, they arrived at Leoch. Yeah.
Yeah. And the loch, the stag, they keep showing that stag. I love this imagery. And the stag, remember, yes, it's Scotland, but it's also, I always think, Fraser, because of that running stag brooch that is at least mentioned in the book. So then we see them having a meal by the fire, and I wrote, Dougal is foul. Tits and swiving. And how many times do we hear this entire episode?
We learned so many words.
I think I knew them already.
And euphemisms for boobs in this episode. Like we had...
Pups?
Paps.
Paps. I'm like, pups? That's a dog. That's a dog.
I have heard that one before. Paps and then, you know, tits and everything else. It was...
Everything
while
but
in
boobs.
This episode, yes, while in this episode, there was nothing, no nudity or any, or
hello.
Like I said, but
that
would
have been easier to take than all the,
but I could
swiping and
I could not have watched
paps.
This episode with my daughter because no. I would not have wanted her to
because,
take any of this yeah. to school with her.
Oh, Lord have mercy. And after I wrote that Dougal is foul, I wrote, Dougal does the humpty hump on young Willie. He's like gyrating and.
But, you know, thank God Willie's along and nobody's bothering Jamie.
Pretty much. I think it's clear that Claire is separated for some reason and Angus brings her some food and Jamie doesn't even... I was actually kind of surprised at how long it took Jamie in the episode to even kind of look over at her or come over to her to say anything. And, I mean, we understand that it is a different situation here out in the boonies. But after all the concern he displayed for her before, he kind of seems pretty unconcerned about her, at least in this beginning, the beginning of this episode.
Okay, I meant to say this earlier.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was ironic when they were traveling, and Claire was talking to Ned, and Ned was talking about how he came to be with the Clan Mackenzie.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, oh, this, that, and the other. And it was a less civilized time than today, basically. And I'm thinking to myself, she probably has that same exact thought about the Mackenzies in their present day. That, you know, my time is so much more civilized. These people are just uncivilized comparatively. So I thought that was a nice little juxtaposition. And I also thought the Scots have a song for everything.
Yes,
in that time period. They have songs for the men riding horses and traveling, and they have songs for walking wool. So there's...
Which we will get to,
but there seems to be a song for everything.
I know he meant it as, not necessarily as being nice, but he was just trying to make sure that everyone ate. But when Angus brought her that, what she called a shriveled Easter rabbit, I mean, that, it was just totally skinned. You could see the empty thoracic cavity. It just looked like, even if I ate meat, I would be like, oh my gosh, that's just a little bit, nah.
I couldn't even, okay, two things. One, they gave it to her with the head still attached.
Oh man, wow.
Two, I couldn't even identify what kind of an animal that was. It was clear that it was a rabbit after she was said Easter
rabbit,
something. Easter rabbit, yeah. Or Easter whatever. But looking at it when they first delivered it to her, I was like, is that a squirrel?
That's what I thought. But it's kind of a big squirrel. Small rabbit, but big for a squirrel because, yeah. And then I thought, after a little bit of more interaction, is Angus missing his two front teeth? Are they blacked out? I know just, Mrs. Fitz has lower I one or two.
They're just dirty.
No, but this was like full on not there. I mean, no. Not just dirty. So I'll have to look again. But it wasn't early in the episode, but it was later on a rewatch that I was thinking about this again. And in Claire's mind, obviously, because of voiceover, she believes that they're using Gaelic to exclude her.
They totally are.
But I don't know if their purpose is to exclude her. I think they're speaking Gaelic because they speak Gaelic, and if it excludes her, oh well.
No, they are clearly speaking about her in front of her. You could tell by the way they would speak and look at her. It was so high school to me. It was like all the little tittering girls in the background, and then looking over at somebody and then laughing. That's what
it was to
me. I
don't think that is proof enough that they were talking about her. I think they were maybe trying to... She couldn't understand. They couldn't get a real rise out of her. But all the talk of swiving and this and that, they definitely were curious if they would offend her or, have an effect on her. It's possible. I guess the point is, could they have spoken English? Yes. And whatever the reason that they spoke Gaelic, whether just because they spoke it and they didn't care to include her at all, or they kept to Gaelic to exclude her. Either way, it definitely wasn't very nice.
No,
I can
sure.
I can go with that.
And then the other thing that came to my mind was that, especially in the beginning end of this episode, like the beginning part of this episode, that Angus was such an a-hole. Like, such an a-hole. And it made me wonder if he figured out that she had drugged him in the previous, interaction.
I never thought that, but I mean, I guess it's possible. I never thought about that. But when Jamie finally comes over, though, I wrote... Come on, Jamie. Give a girl a bone. He gave her a bannock. Yeah, I know. But I'm just saying it's the first time he's like not warning her, not protecting her, but at least talking to her and trying to figure out, are you okay? Don't mind them.
Angus hates everyone.
Exactly. Pretty much.
But the other thing that happened in this conversation that went back and forth was that and I thought this might be the first allusion to Claire having a glass face.
That's exactly what I wrote.
Because he says, I know you tried to run away during the gathering. It's on your mind still, plain and clear.
Exactly. And he doesn't say face.
Right.
But the fact that he says plain and clear, I know what's on your mind, is a clear allusion to her glass face. I don't know if we'll ever hear those words. I certainly hope we do because I love that term and book readers will go nutso for that, I think, like we would. But yeah, so that was kind of how, that's exactly the same note I took. And then we come to their first rent stop and I wrote, Claire looks bored. She's got... Poor girl has nothing to do. She's waiting for someone to get bloody.
Right.
That's her only purpose at this point.
She has no job at this point while they're doing their rents. She's just sitting there. That's it. That's her job, is to sit there. Of course she's bored.
I liked Dougal. I wrote, I like Dougal, smiley face, making chit-chat over the pigs and the people in line. This is like people he hasn't seen in a year. And likely, because they're on Mackenzie lands, they may not be closely related. But a lot of these people are likely Mackenzies. So... At least maybe extended family. So I just like that he was kind of getting in with the peeps. And then Claire is so bored, she does hear singing, right? And she goes to see where this is coming from. And I wrote, it's pee-pee time! Oh Claire God. Goes for a walk, and that's not an LK, that's a ULK.
I feel like we exchanged my dismay at Colum's legs with my dismay at everyone touching pee. Like, there was so much pee.
There was. And I wrote, is that? Yes, it's hot piss.
No.
Step away from the hot piss, Claire.
No, when they start walking the wool and they're singing and then all of a sudden they show from the end of the table and the women are literally, like, squeegeeing
by
pee
hands.
Off
yeah.
the table, I was like,
and
so bad.
If I'm not mistaken, Katie McKenzie, a Scottish singer and harpist, was involved in this episode. We may have recognized her, but we don't have any proof of which person was her. So we did our best guess. Maybe we'll have to see if we can find that out.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong. I do not believe the wool walking was in the first book at all.
Oh, no. I think the wool walking or anything about the whole Because I know peeing on the wool.
I think that came with, it was a conversation between her and Jenny. I think it was at a later time at Lollybrock.
Wasn't it in DIA?
I went through and I Kindle searched and I could not find it in Outlander.
I think it was either late DIA or even a much later book.
Yeah.
But it may have been in DIA.
Totally fits here. It totally fits it here. So it's
they still did it.
Right. It's not a problem, but... I did look for it.
And then I wrote, she has to go asking about the stones. I mean, okay, for the viewer, for the audience, yes, you want to see not just in her voiceover, you want to see that she is actively looking for these stones. I get it. I understand the point behind this. I was just like, girl, don't involve others. This could come back to bite you on the booty.
It's like anything else. Every time she opens her mouth, I'm like, oh, Claire. Claire.
And I think it's funny that... I just read what I wrote. I think it's funny that as Claire's going to pee for them, I thought, fair's fair, right? And then to be caught in that position by Angus of all people. Mid-squat. I'm like, if I'm not mistaken, I think I heard some...
Oh, it sounded like she started peeing. Yeah, that's like, what I mid-stream. Thought.
Poor girl. Talk about being scared and not being able to tinkle in front of people.
No. I mean, I don't want to tinkle in front of people anyway.
Peeless.
I get upset when my 6-year-old comes in the bathroom when I'm going there. Anyway, I wanted to mention this earlier. A long time ago, they released some photos of what looked like a picnic scene with Agav standing to the side.
Yes.
And looking back now, this was that scene. Yeah,
with the long table.
And everyone was like, why doesn't somebody give Agav a scene? I was like, he doesn't belong at that table. There's too much pee on that table. He should not sit at that table. So, Agav, good for you for not sitting at that table. It's covered in pee.
And when Angus bursts in and starts yelling at her, all I could think of was, heed, move, now!
Straight out of that. Sorry, I'm an axe murderer.
We love, what's his name? Help me.
Mike Myers.
Thank you, Mike Myers. He does a fabulous Scottish accent.
And about the pee bucket.
Yeah.
I almost felt like that was a hazing ritual.
Well, sure.
Like, the way that they were, like, it almost seemed like everyone was watching her, like, oh, she's going to do it. No one actually really does this. Like, it made me think that maybe that bucket was usually full of, like, a horse pee.
I was about to say, probably the animals.
Or somebody else, and they were like, let's see if we can get this Sassenach wench to piss in a bucket in front of us. That's how I felt. I don't know if that's what actually was going down, but it felt like a sorority hazing.
As they're leaving that little shelter, that little house, whatever it was that the women were in, as they're leaving and Angus is like pulling her and everything and she's like, get your hands off of me. And he does this movement. It reminded me of like the Three Stooges or whoever it was, like, why I oughta. Yeah. And he does that little finger point or hand, like a fake punch at her. And I thought that was...
He definitely has little dog syndrome in this episode.
Oh, I mean like Napoleon?
Yeah.
Oh, poor Angus.
Well, he's so petite. I know I've said that before. But then when he meets up with Dougal, and he's like, where's she been? And he's like, up to Cockle-Doodle-Doon.
And then, see, we heard different things. I heard something like, all the way in Cockle-Doodle-Doo. So that Cockle-Doodle-Doon is even funnier.
It was. I was like, bah, Cockle-Doodle-Doon.
And then, hold on, I have to say this. Angus says, she's slippery as an eel. And I thought, that's not what Jamie said.
Burr.
No, not burr.
I do not like that term. I don't like it when it's in the book, when he talks about the waterweed.
Here, I felt terrible for Claire. Her humiliation, being called drunk publicly, just being publicly humiliated, basically. And then this dashing Englishman comes out from nowhere. He tries to stand up for her, and he asks if she's all right. And I wrote, he has really nice blue eyes. He's actually kind of handsome. But he's English, so he's the enemy.
I said, Johnny English to the rescue. And then I said, hey, good looking. I said,
Isn't he?
But outnumbered, but still had grit.
He did.
And I said, what was a lone Englishman doing in that village?
That was weird. When he first came up with like that apron thing on, he looked like a
blacksmith or a tanner or something.
And I'm like, I couldn't place it. And then, of course, when he goes back behind the barn of a shed and he's like, I'm going to put my red coat on.
Right. And he's, what? I mean, he was clearly English by his speech patterns.
Yeah, of course. Speech patterns by his accent.
All of it.
All of it.
You knew what I meant. Anyway, I was kind of confused, and the first time I watched this, I actually looked away when he put his red coat outfit on, because I was kind of multitasking. So the second time I watched it, I was like, oh, they totally gave that away, because it was a surprise to me at the end when he came back in the red coat outfit. So I was not expecting that at the end.
And when he's doing this, and again, he's the lone Englishman right now,
yes,
surrounded by Scots, and I wrote, now it's Angus's turn. Angus is foul, telling him to go home and suckle on his mom's bosom. I'm not writing the other word. And then that sound he makes, I won't repeat it. I was like, wow. And then I wrote, you can hear the quiet drone of the bagpipe in the background just as if it were just waiting for action to start. You know those Scots were ready. They're just like, bring it. Bring it.
Oh, they're, you know what, though? The entire episode, I feel like they were constantly like on the edge of that knife
absolutely.
Blade.
Absolutely.
Just like, somebody please challenge me.
Let me do this. We have to... What's the term? We have to wet Willy.
That is not the term. That's not even any term. I don't think anyone's ever said that before,
Whet his appetite. Whet, not wet. Whet. Listen closer to him.
There's an H in there?
I'm making them an H now.
Not the first time.
Not the first time. And then I wrote, yon wee English laddie is a soldier. Oopsie. And I thought, of course, when he gets his jacket, his coat to put on, that could come back to bite them in the booty.
Okay, what did you think? When I first saw him, and I know that the time period was wrong, and he was way too old for that character, but I was thinking to myself, I was like, are they introducing a character from further books?
Okay.
With a colorful last name?
First of all, the name proves us wrong. Mm. Or not wrong, because we haven't said it.
Oh, it's totally not him.
It's not any person from a future, unless they choose to bring someone back.
I was trying to figure out who this whether or not it was a new character completely, or whether or not they were trying to introduce somebody early.
I think it's new so that they can tie something in with what's going to happen next week.
Obviously.
And I don't want to go too much into that, because that could be a whole other conversation, and it's very interesting, and I would love to, but we have stuff to finish here. Yes, I think one of two people that you may be thinking about are introduced towards the end of Dragonfly and Amber.
Oh, of course.
Yeah. Okay. So then
the wool walking early as well. I'm just saying.
Yeah, but that's just a sticky, and that's not a character that's going to come back.
I know. I'm just saying, you never know.
So the first tavern stop, or at least the first one that we see. And I wrote, I know what's coming. Oh my gosh. And then I wrote, here comes the garlic. That, and then the quiet in the room and the low music, you know that obviously whatever he's saying is going to be very serious. And I wrote, here's one for you lazies out there, especially because we're taking notes. I'm so thankful there are no subtitles. I am so happy I don't have to pay attention to what he's saying.
Now, what I what I wrote about this scene was, 1 minute he's joking about Paps, and the next he's all Gaelic and ripping Jamie's clothes off.
And it took him like 70 yanks to get Jamie's shirt off. And I thought, Jamie just sat still? I thought it happened in one yank.
Maybe it did in the book.
In the book, maybe. And then I thought, how many yanks does it take to get to the center?
All of them.
All the yanks. All the yanks.
You know, now, some changes I've noticed in the watching of this from this in the book. In the book, Claire caught on right away what was going on.
Even before the shirt came off?
She caught on the first night because she clearly heard.
Oh, she heard it early?
Yeah, she heard it the first time.
Okay.
Now, they changed
it a little
bit.
Well, she heard it the first time. He used it the first time.
He did use it the first time, so she heard it the first time. And the whole conversation with Dougal and Jamie in the glen later, like in the dark in the woods, happened immediately afterwards.
And that was like kind of confirmation for her.
Right. Okay. So that was something that happened immediately after the first time around. And he only got to rip that shirt off of Jamie once in the book. Afterwards, Jamie would take it off.
That's true.
And in this, he got at least two good torn shirts out of it. I'm surprised Jamie let him have that.
That's all we saw. They could have had more taverns.
Right.
And I wrote,
his shirt was so just like awful.
Poor Jamie Sam. Just one more episode and we're going to see some of that flesh falling off to cause those awful, awful scars.
And
oh my gosh.
I thought Sam played this scene perfectly with stoic humiliation.
Oy, yeah. And I knew that he would likely, for the character and for the story, be still and let it happen. But he was not like shaking, but you could tell, you could see the tension in his body, in his torso. He's like, Dougal, get the freak done. Wrap it up. Do your thing. He was angrier than heck.
Oh, for sure.
But he,
like I said, stoically humiliated.
And then when they were all done and everyone left or was going down for the night, when he takes the shirt and says, be a good lass and mend that, I wrote, whoa. And I just, as you said, my nerd was showing last week. I thought, that's definitely my 21st century showing. Because, and then Jamie was pissy and petulant. He's like, no, I'll do my own dang shirt. And he gets up and, like, grabs it from her and stalks off. I'm like, Jamie, she didn't do anything to you.
It's true, but let's put it this way. When he threw the shirt at her, she's like, mend your own damn shirt. You ripped it. So she was like, hell no, I'm not mending that shirt. And then And she's then like, well, she fine. Says fine. No, but then Dougal's like, well, then he won't have a shirt at all. And then she goes, fine, I'll take care of it. I think maybe perhaps if she'd picked it up right away and said, oh, I'll totally take care of this, Jamie would have been like, oh, that's sweet. But the fact that she was like, F no, I don't want to sew that up. And then Dougal's like, fine, he'll go without a shirt. And she was reluctantly going to do it. He was like, forget it, I'll just do it myself. It could have gone either way. Just saying.
And then the next day, we have Ned again with Claire down by the river.
Black pudding scene. It looked like two turds in a bowl.
I just don't think I ever care to try it.
You know,
if you like it, awesome. But
no, and that's fine. I know that I saw it several times when I was in Scotland, and I remember thinking that it looked like poop. And when I was in St. Andrews,
dark brown poop.
I was in a little bookstore. And I found a recipe book that had, like, authentic recipes. And I saw the recipe for what goes in black pudding. And I was like, blood. I'm definitely not eating that. Like, it was, like, a majority of, like, blood and oatmeal. And I was like, heck no, I'm going to pass.
So I like Claire's hair down. I mean, mostly down. I think a little bit of the sides were up, but I like her hair down. And I wrote, Claire's a bit of a smartass here. She thinks she has it all figured out. And actually, Claire, give the Mackenzies some credit because you never know, ..
No, you don't. And again, the Claire of the series is a little slower than the Claire of the books in this regard.
Yeah. She's just as spunky.
She's spunkier in the beginning. Spunky. Because yeah, she would never. I think that, and I wrote this down as well, while she's on this whole trip with the boys, she's focused. All she wants to do is lay low and get to Crignadoon and get home. Whereas here, she's taking up the battles of the everyman. So, which is good character development, and I don't think any of it is out of character for Claire. I just know that in the books, her focus was laying low. Exactly,
even if it meant letting something under the radar, go by,
being uninvolved, and getting back to Crignadoon.
And then we hear through her voiceover a bunch of snippets of them going to more villages to collect rents, going to more taverns. And then did you catch the very, very, very brief snippet, like literally 2 or 3 seconds, I think, of her near a burn or a river where she looks at her left hand and the gold ring?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, I caught that. Of course I caught that.
Beautiful. And I wrote, Jamie's poor. By this time, it's like his shirt, when it's torn, it's like in 83 pieces.
No, I mean, it was
one
like,
tear and it goes into 80 pieces.
And it was like he didn't have to struggle with that tear the second time because he was just tearing down an old seam. But it was like the original tear, and there was like jagged hanging pieces hanging on the rest of it. So I was like, that poor shirt. His poor shirt.
And then when they come upon the house that's being burnt, and this is our first glance, our first meeting of the watch. A group of men who paroled the Highlands to protect cattle as long as you paid them.
I don't think that we actually met the watch in the books. They were talked about, but I don't think they actually came into view ever.
I don't remember. I don't think so. I know that they definitely mentioned them, but the watch, if I'm not mistaken, in the book at least, without giving anything away, the watch have to do with a certain Amy J going amorcey. Is that correct? In the book? I think so.
You'd think we didn't just finish this read along.
Seriously. Well, it has been a few months.
Anyway, immediately once it was said, he reined in his horse and disappeared. Mm-hmm. He was like, I'm going to go over here.
See ya. And as Myrta said, although yes, they would protect you as long as you paid them, they would also go where the money led.
More importantly, where the money led.
Yeah. And
in fact, I bet if you had money, you could pay them to not trash your house. Absolutely. And steal your livestock.
And to pretend you weren't there if you needed to be. And they basically the watch burned a house, as Claire put it, on a rumor. I thought, how awful is that? We're not even talking about someone who didn't pay you, someone who didn't, I mean, I guess the importance of this is not that it's a rumor. The importance is that it only has to be a sniff of a whiff of a rumor of being a traitor. Correct?
Absolutely.
So it's not just being a traitor. It's the whiff of a rumor. So that's how dangerous and how important it was for this in this environment, in this atmosphere. And I totally forgot. So you just said that you saw him kind of
away.
And I totally forgot to look for Jamie. I didn't even look for him.
No, he was like, I immediately saw him go, oops, bye-bye.
And then we come to another dinner time, and I wrote, Angus and Claire are just not besties. I mean, he is full-on lousy mean to her. She's not nice, but he's some kind of awful. Am I wrong? He just seemed a little bit, you know, she was a little bit strong for a woman at that time, a heck of a lot strong. But I was really not happy with that.
I was thinking to myself that he was, A, all talk about bedding ladies, and that he just really needed to get laid.
Oh.
Like, there was so much pent-up frustration in him, and he was taking it out on her because she was the chick present. And for many other reasons. And I wrote that Angus definitely is harboring some major anger issues, and even Jamie was telling her just to butt out and stay out of it.
Oh, he all kinds. And Jamie, I hear Jamie say Angus twice. He's like trying to, I think, get his attention. Claire and Angus are kind of going at each other, right? Telling her, basically,
you can't call me that, you're a whore. You can't
call me this, you're an English whore. And you hear Jamie say, Angus, Angus. And, but he's not on screen. And then he pops up in between them, like, from the ground.
And hands him a plate of chicken. He's like, take the chicken back.
Take the chicken.
Focus. Focus on the chicken.
And then Claire goes off in a huff. And Jamie goes over to her, but is not trying to console her. He's like, what has gotten into you, woman? Why are you talking to Angus that way?
Well, she's lost all sense of self-preservation.
I know this is fiction, and I know it's the adaptation, and it's different from the book, but I'm still coming from the too modern, from my own too modern point of view. I get it. She was upset, but was she really that insulting? Because Angus went off, and I think Jamie is basically blaming her. He basically is. He's like, what are you doing saying those to him? He's not talking to Angus at all.
No, but she called him a thief.
Knowing what's coming up in episode 109, there's a few away. I guess I'll eat those words because, again, I can't forget that this is a specific time in history where women are in a certain place,
right,
and are definitely don't talk back to people like that,
no,
and don't speak up, and definitely not to men.
No, and that comes up again at the end of this episode.
Yes,
that comes up. So I mean,
and her behavior and. All no,
and she's like, you know, well, where I come from. And Jamie's like, exactly. It doesn't matter where you come from. You need to pay attention to where you are now.
Exactly. And I wrote, very true, Claire, very true. Did you get a look at that stink face on her? She was given good, in a lot of tonight's episode. But she gave good stink house?
Not stink
Stink
house.
Face. I don't know where that was. Stink house was where the pee was.
She's a stink house.
Okay.
She's stinky. Letting it all hang out.
Jamie does seem a right arse nugget. That's all I'm going to say. Again, he's a person of his time.
Well, he's definitely on the side of the clan, for sure.
Well, in this, yeah, when you're out and about and not in the clan protected area, you have to keep your stuff to yourself and to protect the party. And then the next town, did you see the quick flash of Jamie balancing the dirk on his palm?
He's straight out of Instagram.
Straight out of Instagram. Or Instagram was shaped from that.
And I think this is a good point in the story to discuss what happened on Twitter last week.
What happened on Twitter last week?
Your little Twitter moment.
Without using the word. Absolutely.
So funny. Okay.
So about a week or three ago, there was that Instagram picture of Sam.
Yes.
Or Jamie. Yes. Balancing a dirk on his palm with the pointy side down.
Yes.
Right? And I was trying to be all cutesy, and I wrote something like, I don't know, something, dirk, whatever.
But
it was D-I and then she apostrophe put K.
Not an apostrophe.
Sorry.
Asterisk.
So a star, right? And if you look at the picture, you know, yes, I'm being a little teasy, that's fine. But you know very well what the word was. So fast forward to earlier this week, when the Instagram photo is of Jamie Sam basically inspecting a small-ish pistol. And so I, actually not trying to be cute at all, was just making reference to the dirk and the gun. Something like, first it's a dirk and now it's a gun. Something like that. And I tried to do the same thing as before, being cutesy, and put an asterisk where the R was. But Summer, can you tell them what I actually did?
She actually put the asterisk where the I was. So instead of it saying D-I-K, it now said D-C-K.
And I didn't catch it.
No, she didn't.
It was, well, obviously didn't catch it. If I had caught it, it wouldn't have been out there. But someone caught it. I mean, a few people, I'm sure. But someone tweeted me about it, and I was like, someone said, did you mean Dirk? Hashtag with an R. I think it was
Beth Horn. It Thank you Beth so much, Horn. Beth, for helping me but find my shame.
But what made me so, not even so upset, but what but what bothered me was that you deleted it. You were tickled. You
she totally liked deleted it. I think a lot of people, it was hilarious. Well, I didn't leave it up not long enough for a lot, quote unquote, a lot of people to say that they liked it or found it
funny.
No,
all of our responses stayed.
But it was, the responses stayed, yes, but.
No one can go back and see the original
I deleted it from tweet. Facebook, too. And so then I wrote something like, that was the worst on accident, on purpose, non-Freudian, Freudian slip of all time.
For sure.
It was ridiculous. And
so funny.
And it would have been funny, I think, anyway, funny to make that mistake. But the fact that it was with Sam's face on that picture, oh my, how embarrassing was that funny. For me? And I tagged him in that. That was the worst ever. Actually, that's why I had to come down. If I had not tagged Sam Heughan, I may have left it up. Because it was funny. I admit, it was funny. Yes, embarrassing, but funny. But because I couldn't leave it up there with Sam and a fake icky day on there. I couldn't do that.
Oh, it was funny. And it brought back to mind, this was a couple of days ago, I started.
You started what?
I started revising the lyrics. To the theme song of the episode.
The episode? You mean the show?
The show.
You're not going to hear it. Maybe one day.
All right. Email me privately if you want to hear it.
It's
Find me on Twitter.
That's fine.
If you want to know what it is.
It is funny. And maybe one day we'll share it. But I would actually rather share it in a hiatus episode. Because it's entertaining.
I mean, I'm not going to reword the whole song.
It's no, it was just the first line. Okay,
but so again,
we need to get back to this episode.
Find me on Twitter if you want me to privately message you what it is.
Actually, let's just do it. I'll add my little two cents to it.
All right, fine. You don't have to message me anymore. We all know how the song goes. So the original lyrics are, sing me a song of a lass that is gone. And I've been joking about for like weeks about this, like for the last 2 weeks about this.
Was it a slip up the first time?
No, it was on purpose. Because
so
it
you
made
can
me
see
laugh
where her
head.
Mind is.
And I said... And I just walked into the room one day and I said, sing me a song of a lass who loves dong.
Every week or so she'll sing it and I'll hear her, or she'll call me and we'll be chatting and then she'll start singing. You know, something, it'll come up and I'll be like, oh gosh, stop it right now, because I don't want to sing that ever on accident. But then a few days ago I was thinking about that, the song, and I thought, okay, well, if you add Cisco to that, you get dong, 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 dong.
Okay. The dong song. But what I will say about it is, after this whole thing went down and she was like, no, that's not what was on my mind. And I was like, you know what that brings to mind? That certain song I rewrote. And she was like, if you put that on Twitter, I will disown you.
So as they're there in this new town, new little stop, everyone has come forward and paid whatever rent they have. And then Dougal sees a man that he calls Torkel. And I like this character. He's really bright, just beautiful, bright blue eyes. And I wrote, did you recognize him? We talked about it, so now you're going to know my answer. But I recognized him by his name when I looked him up, because he's one of the very few, at least early on-ish, that is listed as a character, besides the main ones, in a character with a name on the IMDb page for episode 5. And the actor is Robert Williamson, and he's on Twitter. So he tweets a lot, so you should give him a tweet and tell him what's up.
Now, what I noticed about this scene... was that at this point, when he comes up and he says, I have no rent and I can't feed my family, Dougal's like, everyone's going to eat tonight. And he starts giving everything away. And as I'm looking...
Do you think of Oprah?
No. You get a goat. You get a goat. No. I was thinking to myself,
where is this
episode
going?
Have they been doing
going?
This in every town? Because they didn't have any stores.
You mean, did Torkel travel around?
No, not Torkel. I'm saying, when they were handing out all the grain bags and the...
All the grain.
When they were handing it out, they didn't seem to have, like, all the goats that they'd gotten at other cities.
The and goats all went the, back to Leah summer.
Did they go back? I thought they had to travel everywhere with them and then...
No, I'm kind of making that up. But maybe they did have people that they let go.
My point is it was the it was giving me the impression that perhaps in most towns they were actually doing that and not keeping anything.
So what happened to Torkel?
Torkel got a bag of grain.
But what happened to him before? The Redcoats robbed his family, and he says, I can't feed my family. So Dougal gives him the grain, and then invites him to come to the tavern for a drink.
He invites everyone to come to the tavern
exactly.
for a drink.
Exactly. So Claire is, again, being a bit sassy, and I thought Stars was right. She does put the sass in Sassnach.
For show.
Good Lord. And Jamie finally stopped Dougal from ripping his shirt, and he got tired of sewing it, maybe, and he takes, now finally he's taking it off himself. I wrote, yay, Tobias is back. Tobias does scholar so well. Very dashing. This man, I'm just sorry, he's it.
And I wrote,
he's it.
I wrote, flash to Frank. As in flashback to Frank.
Yes, and then...
Which is funny, because it's really a flash forward.
I wrote...
Well, this was the first instance we got of them talking about Jacobites.
Yes, but then Claire realizes she has... I wrote, epiphany! She realizes just exactly what Dougal and co. are doing. And she realizes they're Jacobites.
And I think that that forces her to look at everyone in a different light. Because no longer are they thieves, they're rebels. What she should have been thinking from the very beginning... was the fact, because she knew the time period, and all of these people were, it was, you know, where they said they're a few years away from Culloden. Mm-hmm. And on the Culloden battlefield, they lost so many people, and so many people died during Culloden, and they died in the years following Culloden with the eradication of the Scots in the Highlands and yeah. the clans. So she should have been honestly thinking that from day one, that these were all marked men, and their days were numbered, and this was... They were leading up to something that most of these men would probably not survive.
Yes-ish, but she also, at least the first, at least her first gut reaction, though, is where the heck am I? And I need to make sure that I take care of myself or survive this. And so, yeah, so now that she has, even if it's still kind of tenuous, even though she has, she at least knows kind of how she stands and where she stands and what her role is for now, she feels, I think, maybe that she has the more luxury to act out, to speak out. And her opinion, as you said, goes from one of scorn to pity. She knows that Culloden will be the massacre and that effectively will result in the Highland culture being wiped out. It really honestly makes me sad for Dragonfly and Amber. We have plenty of time for sadness, though, so I'm not going to stay with it. But it just, the thinking of Culloden and everything, it just, because you know how it ends. It's just, it's very, very sad. Now, Claire overhears Jamie and Dougal having a discussion outside by the fire.
Now, this conversation happened in the books after the first
tavern,
when mm-hmm. he rips his shirt the first time.
And Dougal says he's Colum's hands as well as his legs. And I wrote, they left out the other bit, but that's spoilery, so I won't go there. And then Jamie's like, did Jamie punch a string in the book?
He did, but in the book, and I wrote this down as well, because I looked it up, in the book... Claire shows up and Jamie is like kind of fuming about the whole thing. And she says, you need to hit something. And she's the one who suggests that he would feel better if he hit something. And then he hits the tree. And then she doctors his hand. So that's how it goes in the book. This works as well. But what we did lose from this scene that was not in the series, mm-hmm. that was in the book, was his demonstration of the sword fighting with his left hand.
Oh, that's true.
Which it could come later.
I was that sad after it was in the book there? It wasn't it after wasn't the, book, the wedding?
It okay. was in the book right there.
That's very sad. You can really see how much family and clan was. It was everything back then. Jamie's response to Claire when she says, you'll let him, basically let him do it again, the whole shirt thing and everything, using him. And he says, he's my uncle. Yeah. And that's the only response that he gives. Like, that's all there is to it. Also, he says trees are safe. And I mean, does he mean they won't hit back or that they can take the hit and not be damaged?
No, I think he was saying the trees are safe from me.
Ah, that's cute.
That's what I assume.
Aw, that's a Jamie joke. A Jamie cute comical moment.
Well, that's how I took it.
Claire now sees the men as rebels. And so she wants to tell them that they're going to lose. I mean, she does tell them, but she wants to make them understand. And talk about a sad story. I mean, the book is wonderful, but it's got a lot of tragedy, whether it's the families, Scotland's tragedy, Jamie's and Claire's. But to bring this shadow over everything, it puts a new filter for me over watching the episodes, even. And I think I'll start seeing this as the story we know, but also as a last glimpse into a proud people. The big X's along the road. Talk about creepy, and no. I don't know what to call those. It's not crucifixion.
It's kind of a crucifixion. It's like crucifixion meets like...
But crucifixion is a way of...
Meets 50 Shades of Grey. I think that shape is actually better suited for like long-term fear-mongering. Yeah, it would stand by itself for much longer.
And I love the shot of Claire. I already kind of said this, but we actually get the shot here. During the funeral for the men who are pulled down... at Dougal's behest. I love the shot of Claire in her full outfit here, the whole fur-lined hood and the wrists and her jacket.
Still remarkably not dirty.
No, very
She's
much.
She's the only non-dirty person.
I wrote, well, this last tavern was one where they didn't have to expose Jamie. I guess
the speech about what they found on the road was enough, which makes perfect sense. And then I wrote, at that night when everyone's in bed or going to sleep, and this is all caps, but I won't yell at you. They kept the sleeping at the door part.
I was so
the candlestick by the bed, the offer of sleeping in the same room, his shocked look at her suggestion, her trying to keep from laughing. She actually did laugh, like, but her trying to keep from laughing at his shock. No, and I love this so much.
His look of like outrage, shock. Was so yeah. cute. I said, and then the outrage on Jamie's face, the insult, and I said, darn it, he's so cute. And I said, he can ruin my reputation anytime he wants to.
And then before she goes back into bed, sorry, I stepped on you. And his shyness, propriety are giving me hints of the wedding night. Are you getting ready? Only two more episodes, two more weeks, girl.
We'll need a special beverage for the wedding night.
Like champagne. We totally do. Come on.
We can do champagne.
I think that's pretty awesome. A bottle each?
Why don't we
do you want pink? Do you want pink Moscato? Let's do pink. Pink champagne for the wedding night. Let's do it.
No, I think the white champagne would be more appropriate because she's not a virgin.
But he is. Mm. Oh, it's true, but there's no breaking of the huh-huh.
Mm-mm.
Okay, so we'll do white. I wrote, aww, he says, I'll be right here.
Like, seriously,
sleeping outside the door.
There's chivalry. And she gave him his blanket, and never has, like, a blanket transfer been, like, sexier.
Yeah.
Here's a blanket from my bed that I've already touched.
Slather.
And, like, their hands
slather
touched.
Much, Summer? Slather much?
Nope, yeah. That didn't happen.
To you? I just saw it happen. You had to pick up your tongue from the floor.
That didn't just happen. No.
And I wrote, Claire gets dangerously close to Cassandra here. Be careful, lass, is what I wrote. She doesn't say where she's at. She doesn't say it's a given, but she's doing everything but saying I'm from the freaking future.
She needs to STFU.
Yes.
Like, every time she opens her mouth and starts talking about doomed, I'm like, you know, they're either going to call you a witch or they're going to call you a spy. All you're doing is... making a case for them to distrust you. And while what she said to Ned Gowan to me didn't scream of, I'm from the future, it definitely screamed from, I'm a British loyalist and our army is way better than yours and you're gonna lose.
Yeah.
So,
and
but either way, it's not working in her favor. And I just, every time she opens her mouth like that, I'm like, oh, please stop.
Just stop it, Claire.
Just stop.
But you can see, well, yes, we know the book, but you can see even where this, if you don't even know the book, you can see where this is going if you just think of the time period. I love how after, once they're in the tavern again, and how after the Viking breaks out, what did I just say?
What? the Viking?
I think I said Viking.
You did say Viking, like a ficus and a Viking?
Pretty much.
An angry tree?
Made love sweet. No. So I love how after the fight breaks out, Claire sighs and says, here we go.
Well, what I loved was that A-hole Angus was the first one to jump
to her
defense.
Absolutely. Well, we don't know that yet. But we find that out.
Well,
we
the
see
first
him.
To fight.
That's true.
He was the first to jump to the fight.
And all she sees is like, gosh, any excuse now, people. Come on.
And
just like
Ned and Claire wisely get the
arse. I just thought
it
was funny.
Like,
that
they were like, find a corner, let's
it's
get out of the way.
I know he's soft and he's not a warrior, but I thought it was funny that Ned was huddled up against Claire. And I wrote,
he's a smart man. You don't get old without being smart.
Well, and you need him. He's your only
very
lawyer.
Important. He's not there for his strength and or sword fighting skills.
And once it's explained to Claire what happened, I wrote, I love Murta. He says, you were the excuse. And I wrote, tell her, Em. I love Murta.
And then he comes back and they say, you know, well, they were defending your honor.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, yeah, they were. Because they were like, you know, you're with us. We can say whatever we want about you, but I'll be damned if we let anybody else say that about you. And I feel the same way about you, Ginger. I can say whatever I want about you, but if anybody else said anything mean about you, I would defend you to the death.
Am I supposed to feel the love?
Yes.
Oh, gosh.
Nothing but love.
You need to work
on
that.
You know straight to your face I say whatever. You know, you and I give each other, like, hell. We, like, tease each other and kind of, like, pick on each other. That's kind of what we do. But if anybody else tried to pick on you, it would be done.
That's my, yeah.
I'd be like, that's my biatch. You can't make fun of my biatch.
So the next scene, Remember, there's a close-up of a sign, the sign outside the tavern or whatever that place is, with a white horse. The sign has a white horse on it. Maybe remember that? Maybe not, but maybe so. Okay. And I wrote, again with the swiving. It's just all these jokes and swiving and this and that and
burr to burr. Men haven't changed much. They still make jokes about having sex.
I know this. So Claire makes a joke, and they don't know.
And it was a good joke.
And it was very funny. And I don't. The silence was almost funnier. It was.
No, it was such a long pause. And then Rupert goes, and they were all looking to Rupert to see how they were supposed to react because it was definitely against him. And he says, "I've never heard a woman tell a joke."
That was awesome.
And that made me so sad. It made me just a little bit sad for the time period because I'm like, oh my God, I tell jokes all day long. If I'm not telling a joke, it's because I'm asleep or taking a nap.
I wish we were in the 18th century.
I would be so popular.
No. You would not be telling jokes.
They would already have, like, burned me at the stake.
Oh, don't say that. Claire mentions Culloden Moor in the flashback forward I wrote.
Oh, my God. Another Seriously, one. That was bothered sad. Me.
It was sad.
It bothered me so hardcore because, like, the minute they flashed to her and Frank walking on Culloden, like, I got chill bumps on my whole body and, like, tears. Like, water straight up in my eyes.
Okay, this is not a spoiler because they've explained what Culloden is. Readers, or if you haven't read, it's not really a spoiler, but history, I mean, I guess you could call history a spoiler. Culloden happened. We're not spoiling anything by saying that Culloden happened. Since we know we have season 2 now, and we know that no matter what happens in season 2, no matter what parts they keep, cut, shrivel up, whatever,
Culloden will happen.
Culloden has to happen, because that's kind of important for the rest of the entire series. However, do you think that they will actually film Culloden on Culloden? Could you imagine? Holy balls.
You know what? I really hope they don't.
I almost don't know. Out of respect, no, I guess not. Could you imagine?
Because do they ever do historical recreations there?
I don't know. It would be something to look into, but that would almost be, I almost would be too much. I mean, could you imagine?
I really hope
they don't. I mean, they might get like protests or something.
That would really bother me. And I'm not too sad. I'm not even like our Scottish heritage is so far back. But still that would really bother me. And not because of my forefathers, but just because of the fact that I just think that would be so disrespectful on many levels.
That's what I mean. Because it's a big graveyard. It basically is.
It is.
It's a memorial.
It is. And they have nothing but those not even headstones, just like markers.
Stones, yeah.
Just clan markers, where this is where the clan such and such basically died. The English
dumped the bodies in the mass graves, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And they did try and do it by clan, though, I think.
They did, except for the rock that said mixed clans.
Yeah.
But, you know, and it just, I don't know. And I personally didn't make it to Culloden when I was in Scotland. I was there so briefly.
Mm-hmm.
And we were very specifically placed. Like, we were basically in Edinburgh.
Mm-hmm.
So we didn't make it up to Culloden. But just seeing it, and it's like, and it wasn't a surprise to me. I've seen what it looks like. But for some reason, with the course of the show and the characters
and them walking through it and telling about it
and I literally, and I've got it again, but I had like goosebumps all over my body. And I just sat there with like my eyes, I wasn't crying, but there was definitely like a film of water all over my eyes. And I was just like, it's just so sad that when you think about the horrific, and it was, he said in 2 hours, like less than, like in a couple of hours or in less than an hour, like 2,000 people just gone. And it was the beginning of the end of the clans.
It was, and no disrespect meant. When I use the word only, I'm going to put it in quotes, quote unquote, only approximately 2,000 people. That, it's not, by today's standards, I mean, that's not a huge number of people, but the point is, that was their army. That was the group of what was left, because they had battles up until then. This was, of course, the last stand, basically. I mean, yeah, so I guess no one's asking us for opinions and or advice, and probably well done, because I would definitely not want to have to make that decision, but I don't know about filming on that.
But I imagine, if nothing else, the scene they shot was evocative in the way they wanted it to be. Mm-hmm. It was... For me, and they showed nothing. Like, they showed nothing but clan markers and the monument, and it was just, it was, like, gutting. It was gutting to look at that and think. And then when they went back to show the Mackenzie clan members,
Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh.
And they went back to show them, and you think to yourself.
Stop it.
You think to yourself,
they may be
most
there.
Most of these people won't make it.
Yeah.
Most of these people won't make
it. I did have the, I don't know, it wasn't like a happy time, obviously, but I did have the opportunity to go to Culloden, and I went through Culloden House and walked some of the grounds and took some pictures, and I'm happy to, they're quite a few years old, but, you know, I'm happy to share them. It was just, I think I went in October, and it was bitter, windy, cold, you know.
It's hallowed ground. I mean, it's hallowed ground. I mean, that's the bottom line.
Definitely very solemn, and I took pictures of the Mixed Clan, the big stone mm-hmm. kind of thing, and I don't know if I got a picture of Stone Mackenzie, but I got a picture of the stone for the Fraser Clan, and it was just, because, yes, I had Jamie on the mind.
Of course you did.
On the brain, on the mind.
Of course you did.
Back then, but if you ever get a chance, you know, I would recommend going there. It's definitely worth your time. It definitely is an important place if you have the time to go.
It's very important. I mean, even if you were not interested in this series at all, if you do make it to Scotland, it's a very important piece of Scottish history. So you should go. Obviously, I failed in that and I didn't make it. But well, when I go next time, I'm going.
Technically, it's part of English history as well. I mean, yeah. it was an interaction.
No,
and
for sure.
And if you're an American or someone of any country of Scots descent, likelihood is someone from your clan was, if not involved in, someone from your family or clan was not, if not involved in Culloden or one of the battles, then likely affected by the aftermath of Culloden. Okay. So on to a little bit less.
Back to that.
To finish the episode.
So we go back to Angus.
Another camping spot.
And yeah. Angus is helping Claire. And I thought to myself,
I think
he got laid.
Wait, what?
I think he must, I mean, oh. I can't think of anything else. And maybe it was him.
I did not think about that.
Maybe it was him beating the crap out of those people that, like, that's got true. Rid of that frustration that was,
testosterone
like, housing
poisoning.
In him. Oh, for sure.
Where have we heard that?
Dude, he was...
Testosterone poisoning.
No,
totally.
I agree. He was totally being poisoned by his testosterone.
Again.
Because I thought to myself, he is almost sheepish. Yeah. He's definitely
gone. I don't know about sheepish, but he's...
He seemed like he was, like, almost like, dude, I'm an ass. And I know I'm an ass.
I didn't get that. I just thought it was like,
compared to the previous weeks leading up to that, he was being a beep.
And I know he was, but
in this episode, I don't know what transpired. If it was just beating other men to a pulp helped him get that frustration out, but he stopped taking it out on Claire. That's my point.
Testosterone poisoning.
He stopped taking it out on Claire.
So now I wrote, "Oops! Now Ned is Issy Pay." Gosh. And Claire goes down, and Dougal lets her, basically, but Claire goes down to the river alone. And then in a few minutes, Dougal goes down
to
there.
I think that in Ned's defense, I think that he thinks that she's not what she says she is.
Well, and
they all know that.
What Dougal tells her when he gets down to her by the river.
And you know that anything she said to Ned has gotten back to Dougal.
That's what I'm saying.
Point.
I think right when he left, either Ned's already told Dougal by this time, and Dougal's like, just let her go. Or when Dougal says, just let her go, because Ned has just sat down next to him, he tells him at that point. Because it is, we're guessing, a few minutes or something before Dougal goes down. And then when he does go down, he's like, look you, who are you? What are you? You know, and he already had that on the brain, but I'm thinking Ned had a few words with him just now.
No, and I think that we got another insight into the Dougal versus Claire, which has been an ongoing interaction. And this time around, I think they're being more honest with each other. I think that leading up to this, with everything that happened prior to them leaving for the rents, they had like a begrudging understanding of each other. And then they got on the roads and she was...
And it all went to pot.
Right, it went to pot, and he's been focusing on her because he's like... I think that she brained him over the head, and he was like, I don't want anyone to know that she got it over on me.
I kind of think he may want to swive her.
Well, I mean, that's a given. Don't they all want to swive her at this point? She's
speaking
the only chick
swiving,
in the group.
No, speaking of Dougal wanting to swive, have they made mention of his wife? At
no.
all?
No, what but I'm sure name? It'll come up. But they didn't really bring mention to his wife in the book either.
They mentioned her.
I mean, they all know he's married.
Well, that's what I mean. They gave her a name, and
they named her house. No, in the book, I'm saying. I know, and I'm telling you that in the series, they haven't mentioned his wife or his kids or anything. But I think that the first time that really comes into play is when Jamie talks about being fostered to him. But
that's true. And I wrote, when he does come down, the first shot of him, he doesn't stay there very long, but I wrote, here comes Dougal. He looks very King of the Mountain in that first shot where he's just kind of standing there with his hands on his hips or something.
No, and I think that this whole scene was very good because he explains to her why it's so important that they keep
a unified front.
A unified front and keep her in check because she knows things about them. She knows more about them.
Absolutely.
More about them than she should know about them.
That's true.
And it's not safe. Like if she were a spy and he can't verify or deny that fact, he can't prove it one way or the other. But if she were a spy, she knows too much about the clan to go back and be with her British counterparts.
I think would have been on the opinion for a little while now that she knows too much about them that could be hurting them.
Of course she does.
Especially with the whole Jacobite thing. But it's not just that. It's almost even worse.
They don't even realize how much she knows.
But it's not just that she knows stuff that could get them killed. Them, even probably her, damaged or hurt. It's not just that. And that is a real, real danger.
Yeah.
The other thing is, now he's saying, and from his point of view, he's absolutely right. To the end effect, she's causing dissension in the ranks.
Of course
she is. And that's almost worse.
Of course she is. Because she went to Ned and she said to him, you're not going to win this.
Yeah, and she doesn't think about it like that.
To be honest, though, would be the most effective spy work ever. You know what I mean? To just
let people do the work for you.
Exactly. To be planted in the middle of this group of people and just be like, you're not going to win.
Mm-hmm.
You have to know that the British Army is the best in the world. And all that's going to happen is bad things to you. You cannot win this. And that's all you need to do is plant the seed to these people that they are fighting a losing battle. And if one person starts to believe it, then two people start to believe it. And then you come to a point where no one wants to fight anymore. And I think that Dougal recognizes that as being a major issue.
And she says, basically says, I'm just trying to warn you. And he says, warn me about what? And he leans in, and I love his posture. And that look on his face was almost like, not hobbity, but very like, warn me about what?
He was a dwarf.
I know. I'm not saying he was hobbit.
I'm just saying maybe it was dwarfy.
Dwarfs don't do the thing that I'm thinking about. But anyway, it was just very like, it was what they've shown us from in the clips. It was, warn me about what? That little leaning forward, menacing kind of thing he was doing. And I just loved his posture.
Well, he's just like, tell me. You've been telling everyone else. I dare you to tell me. Tell me to my face what you've been telling everyone else.
Remember that charming English laddie who put on his coat of red?
And I wrote, Mr. Handsome is back.
He's back. And the redcoats are surrounding them. It's not just a few on a hill. Over the river, behind the river,
all around.
In the woods.
And Dougal mistakenly thinks that the fact that they're on Mackenzie land will save them. And that is not the case. And there are more redcoats than there are Scots, for sure, in this group. Not even just the present at that situation, but in the whole group as a whole.
Yeah.
And
we learned the charming English laddie's name, Lieutenant Jeremy Foster.
And I thought he's an interesting new addition. I'm enjoying him. I don't think it, like I said, and like I've said this over the few weeks that we've been doing this, that I don't think that their additions take anything away from the story at hand.
This is definitely an addition, as you said. I don't think there's anyone named. I don't remember a Jeremy Foster from the books.
No, I Kindle searched.
There is a lieutenant. Now, maybe a different person, different whatever. But I wonder, without giving a spoiler away, there's a certain, at least in the book, and there's a chapter. It's chapter 12 called Garrison Commander. And episode 6 is called The Garrison Commander. So you can guess who that's about. That's not a spoiler.
It's about me.
There's the bad guy in it. That's not necessarily a spoiler. The bad guy comes back. But he, in the book, he has a lieutenant do a tiny bit of dirty work. I'm wondering if they're going to use him. You don't know.
They won't.
It would be... Think about it. How great would it be for inner... Because he's trying to help her, right?
That would not be great.
It would be great for tension.
No.
Here's this guy who's trying to help Claire, and he's asked to do dirty work. Hey, it would be great tension. Great acting. And even harder for Claire. Anyway, so... We learn about his name. His name is Lieutenant Jeremy Foster, and he basically asks this question again. Are you okay? Are you here of your own free will? She doesn't even open her mouth, but just as she, like, makes
She's
a face
just
to...
looking. She just looks back and forth. She looks at Dougal.
But she kind of takes a step forward to say something almost, but her mouth isn't open yet. The scene goes black.
And he said, are you here by your own choice?
Yeah, same thing.
And you hear like, of your own. What will she say?
Well, we know
what
because.
What will she say? But I want to know what this means. I want to know what this means to the story. Because in the course of the book, Dougal is the one who takes her back to
That's
meet
what I'm saying.
With the English.
But this is what I'm saying. Let's not speculate.
But I don't think it's a spoilery Next. Because my question is that the way that this is going is that it's to me, it's saying very clearly the English potentially bring her back to the English as opposed to...
But even saying that she's going back to the English is a little bit spoilery. All I'm saying is next week when we find out what happens, we can say in the book it happened like this and we can definitely juxtapose the two. Right now, I just think it's interesting that this guy was not in the book. And this event did not happen in the book, right?
No.
Okay. So I think that's enough to say, knowing what didn't happen in the book and what did happen here in the end of episode 5, and then knowing what ultimately happens in episode 6, which is chapter 12, I think that will give us plenty to talk about next week.
I mean, if there's an episode, we have plenty to talk about.
That's true. But I mean, we can definitely talk about the differences there.
And if you keep tweeting like you've been tweeting,
you'll have
you
plenty
can
to
have
talk about.
Way more Dong references.
Okay, so, or Dirk references. We can just use Dirk for that word now, too. Okay, so, I think we have to wrap it up. This has gone on long enough. Thank you so much, as always, for listening. We look forward to our next episode.
Visit our website at www.outlanderpod.com. Follow us on Twitter at OutlanderPod. Find us on Facebook at facebook.com/outlanderpod or email us at outlanderpod@gmail.com.
Last night that my young love